Even supposing Husk's right hand to be disengaged, it would have been impossible for him to have reached this distance without attracting the attention of the lady who sat between us. 32, November 7, 1905. Circle of 14 people. The clairvoyante, Mrs. Endicott, of Brixham, in Devonshire, was sitting on my left. Soon after John King came, a white form was seen by her at my left shoulder, and she received the following messages: A. I am sorry my sister has been ill. She is better now. B. Jam going to pay a visit with my sister. The figure seen clairvoyantly was Iola. Her sister had been ill, and was then better. The day following the seance, the 8th, her sister went for a long distance into the country, to pay a visit of condolence and assistance to another sister who had recently lost her husband. It is hardly necessary to say that Mrs. Endicott was entirely ignorant of Iola or her sister's in earth life. November 14, 1905. Circle of 14 people. Several spirits made themselves known to sitters by singing familiar tunes or playing familiar airs on the zither. A small hand came round the left side of my head, and touched me several times. November 27, 1905. Circle of 15 people. I sat next to Mrs. Emerson, Nurse Graham, a well-known clairvoyante. She described a lady very near me on my right. As she had never been to a materialization seance before and was a stranger to us all, I think what she said from time to time may be taken as good evidence. With regard to the spirit who stood near me, she corroborated the statements of all other clairvoyants whom I had met when sitting with Husk. She also told me she saw Uncle, the Cardinal, Ebenezer playing the zither, the angel choir, and the singers of the solos. She described the band of light which joined Uncle to the solar plexus of the medium, and, later, how this kind of band joined each materialization to Husk. The power was very strong, for nearly the whole evening I felt wafts of air across my knuckles. November 28, 1905. Circle of 12 people. Just before John King came, my left shoulder was gripped. I asked, "Who is it?" The reply was the name of a man who had denied spirit return in life, and who, about 6 months before, had sat with me at one of Husk's seances. He continued, "Yes. I give in." The curious thing was that this was the first evening since his death that three of his friends were present together at a seance. Tom Cole, a Lancashire miner, announced himself, and sung a song in the Lancashire dialect. January 30, 1906. Circle of 14 people. A gentleman present, who very seldom attended, asked Foley, after he had sung Rocket in the Cradle of the Deep, to sing the magic flute. Uncle came forward and said, "He wishes to know which aria you want." "The second," was the reply. Thereupon Foley sang the second aria of the magic flute correctly without accompaniment. The zither, while being played upon, altered course at request, going from one person to another several times, and it went through the foot as usual. February 12, 1906. Circle of 15 people. After Foley had sung Rocket in the Cradle of the Deep, the same gentleman alluded to above asked him to sing Apostrophe the Diver, which he did at once correctly without accompaniment. February 20, 1906. Circle of 10 people. I saw the zither return through the floor by flash of light or illuminated patch. 33, February 26, 1906. Circle of 12 people. Two women materialized without any bandage round the mouth. One was a near relative of mine who had passed over 3 months before. It was a very good likeness. A spirit seen by two clairvoyants standing behind me. One of the two clairvoyants told me it was Iola. The incidents that I have recorded in the foregoing pages are those which struck me as specially worthy of mention from my own point of view at one seat in large circles. No doubt the other sitters observed phenomena that, from their point of view, were equally deserving of recognition. Judging by the insistence with which many of the members of our societies returned again and again to the seances, it is to be presumed that they had recognized their friends in the materializations and believed in the genuineness of the other manifestations. It would weary my readers to describe the phenomena that habitually took place. They generally came in the same order and in the same convincing way: a. The greetings and blessing of Cardinal Newman; b. Singing by the circle with spirit voices joining in; c. Playing on the zither, fairy hells; d. Journeys of the zither, always playing a definite tune, to parts of the room far beyond the reach of the medium; e. Arrival of John King; f. Materializations; g. Singing of solos; h. More gyrations of the zither, playing all the time; I. Its rush through a wall, a floor, or a door, and its return; k. Often the chanting of Greek priests; l. A final hymn with spirit voices again joining in. Whatever theories are afoot about the aerial singing and the materializations, and they are many, I'm not aware that anyone has had the temerity to profess to account for the flight and management of the zither, or for the column of light seen by many different clairvoyants standing or floating behind certain sitters. The zither careers swiftly about and alters its course at the request of individual sitters, never ceasing to play by fingers on its chords. If the medium had his right hand free, he could not control the movements of this instrument and play it at the same time, nor could he control these white forms. The striking proof is a test that is inexplicable by any theory of fraud on the part of the medium. Though some of the whispers through the tube are husky, the voices of the controls, John King, Uncle Joey, Christopher, who lisps, and Ebenezer, do not resemble the voice of the medium in the slightest degree. Uncle talks the whole evening, and answers all sorts of questions on the spur of the moment. There is never a jar nor a tactless word, and John King remembers every sitter who has ever sat with his medium. Chapter 4: Mental Phenomena in England. Further manifestations, table, tilting, disadvantages of using material objects, automatic writing, Ouija board, planchette and table tilting only the physical means of expressing one spiritistic phenomenon. Admiral T. gives information in South Sea of an unexpected disaster in China, his forecast the same as that of director of the observatory at Hong Kong. Table tilting with the Endicott's theory of mind reading considered, the photograph test, Mrs. Endicott very successful, the astral form of Mr. Henry Crookes, the photograph test again successful, Captain Allen in spirit life picks out a photo of Iola, Mr. Peters tests, Mrs. Arnold, Miss McCready, general success with the photograph test, premonition of a relative's death through Mrs. Davis-Clara Bell, Carter's eye of spirit present falls on the floor, planchette writing of Mrs. Arnold, fallacy of the theory of mind reading, Miss Earle predicts the death of my mother, which occurred a few hours later, Mr. Von Borg, my relative controlled by Iola to take papers from a bureau, my own attempts at spirit photography, Mr. Richard Borsell, committed fraud occasionally, but had genuine power, photograph of a gentleman in his library while his funeral was going on, precipitations upon old photographs, I again visit America. When we seek to establish communication with the unseen without going to professional mediums, it is usual to adopt an intermediary such as a small three-legged table, an Ouija board, or planchette. These are clumsy methods and slow, especially the first, and they are all subject to the same disadvantage. The true psychic is aware that the letters or words are in his head before the table or other object moves. Consequently, he does not quite know, when the word is spelt out, how much is due to his own automatism. I have sat many times at a table in my library with my relative A, and I understand from him that he is conscious of two letters ahead, of what, at the moment, is being manifested by the leg of the table. He is not conscious of moving the table, but believes that the tilts are performed in some way through his organism. This does not invalidate the message. Indeed, the answers to the questions I have often put through the table have been such as he would be unable to give from his personal knowledge. If I may risk a prophecy as to how messages from the unseen will be received in years to come, I should say that what is now known as inspirational writing will be found to be the most effective means of communication between the discarnate and the incarnate spirit. As far as I can judge, automatic writing, table tilting, Ouija board, and planchette are only the physical means of expression of one phenomena, The message from the discarnate spirit impressed upon the brain of the psychic, probably through the spirit brain. The brain commands the nerves and muscles to deliver the message by means of pencil, table, or whatever the inorganic object may be in the room. I do not wish to dogmatize on this or any other subject, but I think this will be found to be so. If I am right in my conjecture, it is futile to use the intermediary. Why not in the first instance sit down and write what comes into your head? I have gradually come to the conclusion that the best plan is for the psychic and the positive to sit opposite to one another at a small, unvarnished, deal, three-legged table, with their hands on it, but not touching. After a few words have come through by ordinary tilting, the psychic will be found to be receiving impressions. These should be recorded in the notes in brackets. The table is required as a connecting link between psychic and the sitter. It will be found after a few minutes that the impressions will come with fair rapidity, and the tilting, which causes great waste of energy, can be almost dispensed with. Through the clumsy process of table tilting, I have received many messages from relatives and friends. After a short time, I got to know which of my relatives was present by the nature of the tilt. The gentle movement of the table was Iola, and the decisive, dignified taps of my father were most characteristic. A. The psychic could get very little alone. I got nothing whatever out of the table myself. But when we sat together, and conditions were favorable, we were able to receive trustworthy messages. I will give an example: :soft-34, on Sunday, April 30, 1905, at 10 p.m., my relative and I were having an interesting conversation with a friend who had lately passed over to the other side, when the direction of the tilting was suddenly changed. Instead of tipping towards the psychic, as it had been doing before, it moved across the line between us, showing that a new influence was present. I said, "Please give your name," and the taps indicated T. This was the name of a distinguished admiral under whom I had served 20 years before. Q. Have you any messages to give? A. Yes, I expect that Rojdestvensky will meet with a typhoon tomorrow. Now 10 p.m. April 30th, in England would be 6 a.m., May 1st in China. If Admiral T. were phrasing his message in China time, he would be referring to Tuesday, May 2nd, as tomorrow. Admiral T., who passed over many years before, had manifested himself to me on at least 20 occasions, on both sides of the Atlantic, and through 5 or 6 mediums. Though a typhoon in May, in the China Sea, is of a very rare occurrence, I thought this message had some significance, and I took care the next day to give a copy of it to a friend in London. It subsequently transpired that Admiral Rojdestvensky, with the larger part of his fleet, was at Van Fong Bay, on the south coast of Hainan, on May 1st. It is a very exposed anchorage. On Thursday, May 4th, the following notice was in the London daily papers: "A typhoon visited the South China coast this week, and it is reported that the Russian Baltic squadron was caught in it, the smaller craft being scattered." I now wrote for information to my friend Dr. Dobok, the director of the observatory at Hong Kong, and received his reply in August, together with a copy of his monthly report, from which I extract the following items: :soft-hyphen on April 30, 1905, 12.10 p.m. The barometer has fallen on the China coast, particularly in the north, and risen quickly of Luzon, probably moving towards WNW on May 1, at 12.14 p.m. The typhoon in the China Sea may be situated to the SSC of Hong Kong and between the Paracels and the W. coast of Luzon. Probably it is moving towards WNW Red S cone and drum hoisted. These are the warning signals for the approach of a typhoon. On May 2nd, at 6.25 a.m. Red S cone and drum lowered. The depression in the China Sea no longer traced. So it appears that the London daily papers were wrong, and the typhoon dissipated in the middle of the China Sea. That is of small consequence. Admiral T. did not say that Rojdestvensky would meet with a typhoon, but I expect. The point is this: there was a typhoon in the China Sea on May 1st, and it was in such a position that, if it had traveled as was expected by the director of the observatory, it would have passed over Hainan the next day. Considering the exposed position of the Russian fleet, it cannot have failed to do much damage, as much probably, as the guns of the Japanese did a fortnight later. In short, Admiral T. made the same forecast as the director, who gave instructions for the storm signals to be shown at Hong Kong. This is a good example of accurate information furnished by a denizen of the next state of existence. It was, no doubt, given to me as a test. Admiral T.'s communication to me was 6 hours before the time of the storm signals being shown. He may have judged for himself, or he may have seen into the mind of Dr. Doberg. Either way it does not matter, for the fact remains that he gave me in a house in Southsea an unexpected item of information of a disastrous event that was officially forecasted 6 hours later in China. 35. To continue my experiences in table tilting. On September 20, 1905 I paid a visit to a fisherman, Mr. Endicott and his wife at Brixham in Devonshire. They have an old three-footed table made out of some wreckage, at which they had often sat and obtained manifestations. They are both psychics, but Mrs. Endicott has the greater power. We sat with our hands flat upon the table. In a few minutes the latter gave signs of animation, and indicated that a spirit was present for me. I called out the letters of the alphabet, and the following dialogue took place: :\Q, will you give me your name? A. Yes, Iola. Q, have you a communication to make? A. Yes, W, I am going to arrive on session night to greet you both. Correct. The session of sittings was to begin in a fortnight in our private room in London. After a pause of 3 months, a member of my family had decided to go with me. Q, will you give me a test? You know the trouble we have had with personating spirits. A, yes. Q, what is the name of your youngest sister in earth life? A, dear T. Correct. The name given had not been applied to her sister for 35 years, as I afterwards found out. It was a pet name and only used by one member of the family. 5 minutes later Mrs. Endicott said, who is G. a little lady. The name was the working name of the sister called T. Q, please give the name of the town where you passed over. A, Kilmarnock. Correct. Q, what country? A, England. Wrong. Q, can you give the number of years since you passed over? Please tap the floor once for each year. A, 31 taps. The proper answer should have been 30 years, 4 months. Q, what is the short name of your eldest brother? A, T. Correct. Q, what is the number of the house in R. Square, where you lived? A, 35 taps. Correct. Q, what is the number of the house in which you lived in E. Square? A, 21 taps. Wrong. But on my saying so, 2 taps were added, which made the number correct. Some private conversation followed with a male relative, the table tilting at right angles to its former direction. We now had tea, and afterwards sat again. Mrs. Noel Endicott, a psychic, daughter-in-law of the fisherman and his wife, came in, and made a fourth sitter at the table. In a minute or two Iola announced her presence. Q, can you tell me what I have in my pocket? A, yes, photographs. Correct. Q, how many? A, 3 taps. Correct. Q, which of the 3 do you like best? A, the one you have enlarged. I laid photographs on the table and penciled the numbers 1, 2, 3 on them respectively. Q, do you mean number 1? A, yes. Correct. The face is 4 times the size of the others. Q, do you remember the one which Captain Allen picked out? This incident is described later in this chapter. A, yes, 1 tap. Correct. Q, what is the name of the lady who is taken with you in number 2? Mrs. E. Sensed Agnes, which is correct for the Christian name. The spirit could not give the surname. Q, what is your first name? A, given correctly, after some private details :\Q, do you know we have just moved a picture of yours? A, yes. Mrs. E. Not long ago. Q, in what room did I put it? A, Dr. Mrs. E. called out the correct answer. Q, Do you know the name of my eldest daughter's husband? A. G. Dash. Correct surname. Various other details were given. It was obvious throughout that Mrs. Endicott's sensing was as reliable as the table, but the latter was required for connecting the members of the circle. She gave the correct surname of Iola. During the second sitting, after tea, I let the table slip through my fingers as it tilted, and at all times only touched it lightly. I had met Mrs. Endicott before in London, and also her daughter-in-law, but neither of them knew, normally, anything whatever about my affairs, or relatives, alive or dead. It was the first time I had seen the fisherman. There are only two theories to account for the foregoing phenomena: A. Mind reading, B. The presence of invisible intelligences. Let us consider this much talked of and, in my opinion, overworked theory of mind reading. First, I would ask, whose mind is being read? Is it mine? Well, if so, how is the pet name T to be accounted for, and the wrong answer of England for Scotland? Certainly neither of these items came out of my mind. Then, how is it I have never since been able to obtain such precise information through the mediumship of the Endicotts, though, of course, I have had excellent tests through Mrs. Endicott in other ways? Again, who moved the table? It generally, but not always, tilted towards Mrs. E. I watched her and her husband carefully. She did not consciously move the table, I am sure. The impressions she often received had nothing to do with what was passing in my mind. Take the first message from Iola on this particular day. It did not originate with me, and was on a subject of which the Endicotts were entirely ignorant. I paid several visits to these psychics after the one I am describing, and came away with a number of questions unanswered or answered wrongly, though in every case I was acquainted with the correct answer. If mind reading is the correct solution of the difficulty, why is it all powerful one day and powerless the next? I attribute the phenomenon to the presence of spirits, who impressed the psychics, chiefly Mrs. Endicott. I do not deny that Iola may have assisted her own memory by tapping my consciousness, especially in the case of the numbers given, but it was she who gave the replies through the organism of the psychic. As in the case of my relative A, it may be that Mrs. Endicott's hands automatically moved the table after the message was received in her brain. That is not proved, it is possible, but Iola was there in the room, and that is all I care to establish at present. At the end of August, 1906, I again visited the Endicotts. The table seances were very wearisome and unsuccessful. I asked many questions, but got only one reply worth recording. Iola manifested, and I inquired the name of her father. The reply was correct, and it is a very peculiar name. I doubt if there is another person in Great Britain with the same Christian name. A characteristic message, as from the father, was added. 36. In another form of spirit manifestation we were more fortunate. I gave Mrs. Endicott a packet containing 40 crates de visite, and asked her to pick out the portrait of Iola, whom she had often seen clairvoyantly. I retired to another part of the room, and turned my back to the psychic, who unfastened the packet herself. After feeling them for a moment or two, she said, "There is more than one of the spirit here." I said, "Yes, two." In 2 minutes both of the photos were handed to me across my shoulder. This was done without any preliminary guesses. They were the first two given back into my hand. Neither picture had ever been shown to the psychic before. Towards the end of August, 1907, I again visited the fisherman's cottage. My first sitting was on the 19th. Within 5 minutes of my greeting Mrs. Endicott, she said, "A man has come with you. He is a big man, his name is Henry, he has a broad, open forehead, square face, and big jaw. One eye looks a little fuller than the other. I should say he opens one eye a little wider than the other. His hair is brown, but there is grey in it. I get a B. What is that for?" This was about 3.43 Greenwich Mean Time. At 4.10 she said, "That man is still here. He is not an old man, looks about 40. I have noticed that the astral form always looks younger than the natural body. I have got the idea that he is sitting, resting. Does he ever talk with you about New York?" I have an impression that way. At 6:40 p.m. I posted a card to Mr. Henry Crooks, at the Carlton Hotel, Southsea, asking him to make a note of his doings between 3:40 and 4:40 p.m. that day. He did not receive the card till the morning of Wednesday, the 21st, when he wrote the following from memory. Between 3 and 4 p.m. on Monday, 19th, I was sitting in an armchair in the recreation room at Carlton Hotel, Southsea, reading the Express. At about 3:40 I felt rather sleepy. I tried to keep awake, but could not. At about 3:45 I dozed off for 5 or 10 minutes. Was awakened by the waiter clattering teacups and plates. At 4:00 p.m. I, in company with my wife and four other ladies, walked to the Mikado Tea Rooms in Palmerston Road, where we had tea, and remained there till about 5 p.m. The description of Mr. Henry Crooks given by Mrs. Endicott is very good, better than she has ever given me of any other spirit except Iola. Her tells me that the allusion to the eyes is significant, and that his spectacles are constructed to obviate the inconveniences of different forms of astigmatism in the two eyes. This peculiarity is not now noticeable to a casual observer, on account of the glasses, and I was entirely ignorant of any difference between them. I returned to Southsea from Devonshire on the afternoon of Thursday, August 22nd, and at 6:00 p.m. the description in my notebook was read to Mr. and Mrs. Crooks. After this I opened his notes, which I had not before seen, and read them. The night previous to the appearance of his astral I had been discussing with Mr. Crooks my photograph test with Dora Hahn in New York. Before getting to Eastleigh on the morning of the 19th, I had completed my notes of a séance which I had attended with Mr. Crooks on the previous evening, and my thoughts did not dwell on him during the run down to Brixham. It was no thought form that Mrs. Endicott saw. She has often told me that she can distinguish thought forms from astral or spirit forms. In subsequent conversation Mr. Crooks has told me that he never sleeps in the afternoon, and that on Monday he dropped off into a deep sleep at the time mentioned, and against his own desire. His glasses were not in place. Remarks by Mr. Henry Crooks. My eyes are both astigmatic, the cylindrical axis of the right spectacle lens is nearly vertical, while that of the left lens is almost horizontal. I have been wearing glasses 2.5 years only, and, until a few years ago, I could not read ordinary print at all with the left eye. Mr. Jeweler, the oculist, tells me that, with the naked eye, my sight is only 1/10th, 1/10th, of normal. This allusion to my eyes is certainly significant, as nothing special is noticeable to a casual observer. Another point to be mentioned is that, when my eyes are closed, they go out of accommodation nearly vertically, instead of horizontally, as is the case with most people. With regard to my sleeping in the afternoon, it is not at all a habit of mine, and this was the only occasion on which I have done so during my visits to Southsea. H.C. 37. After this we sat down to the same table, as on previous occasions. Iola made herself known, and gave a correct description of what she saw me doing 2 days before in my library. A brother-in-law came, and identified himself by name. I then put a packet of 40 photographs into Mrs. Endicott's hands, told her to open it herself and select the picture of Iola, taking up a position several feet distant, with my back towards her. The packet contained some of these photographs used for a similar test the previous year, and many newer ones. She had never seen either of the two portraits of Iola that I had inserted among them. In less than 5 minutes one of these was handed to me over my shoulder, and shortly afterwards the other, no preliminary guesses. The next day after some unsuccessful table tilting, Mrs. Endicott said of Iola, once she came to me in an earth dress. It was a check, with large, but not long, sleeves, the bodice was short. Q. How old were you when that picture was taken? A. 11 years. Correct. Mrs. E. It was a short bodice, with big sleeves, a low neck, 3 or 4 little flounces round the bottom of the dress, braidings around the flounces, something around her neck. It was a check dress, the hair was brushed back. Q. I have a picture of Iola in that costume. It is a daguerreotype. A. Three taps. Yes. Q. Where is it? A. Large bookcase. Correct. Q. What part of bookcase? A. Top. Wrong. Q. You have often seen it. You know it is not on the top of the bookcase? A. Drawer. Correct. I described the place, which is the top private drawer of the solitary big drawer of the largest bookcase in my room.